This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 5th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 115, the first of 2020. Happy New Year. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, five fearless predictions for 2020. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The big deal feature. Pollster Mario Canseco of Research Co. joins me to look at what 2020 has in store in municipal, provincial, federal, and international politics. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, for those five fearless predictions. This is the first edition of the Breaker.News podcast for 2020, so what better time than to look inside the Breaker.News crystal ball and trot out my five fearless predictions for 2020. Starting with, the Lunar New Year of the Rat will begin later in January with Alberta Premier Jason Kenney and his war room smugly reminding us that Alberta oil is rat-free. The PD Surrey and BC Ferry Twitter parody accounts will have a crossover thread when Surrey Mayor Doug McCallum is seen on a Tsawwassen to Swartz Bay sailing with his key advisor and donor, Bob Chima, for another meeting about quote-unquote traffic fine revenue with Solicitor General Mike Farnworth. In the summer, Vancouver's annual Dinner en Blanc will find its natural new home under the spinning chandelier near West Bank's Vancouver House. Emergency health services and hazmat teams, however, will be called to the scene when the chandelier spins and the pigeon guano falls during the third course of the annual millennial picnic. After jointly depriving British Columbians of ride-hailing for so many years, an ex-BC Liberal cabinet minister will reveal Uber shares in the annual disclosure form, and an NDP cabinet minister will lead all elected officials in ride-hailing expense claims. On the international scene, the commercialization of Greta Thunberg, a line of How Dare You, trademarked, How Dare You branded licensed climate-specific merchandise will be rolled out, such as rain ponchos, sunglasses, SPF 50 and above sunscreen. But like IKEA, it'll appear Swedish on the outside, but it'll be made in China. So there you have it, five fearless predictions for 2020. You can call me a genius if any of them come true. If I'm wrong, well, hey, look over there. It's a spinning chandelier under a bridge. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Lillian Cheng reports in the South China Morning Post, Hong Kong's Ocean Park will freeze salaries to avoid layoffs, with visitor numbers slumping 60% as protests take hefty toll. The last time the tourist attraction froze all salaries was in 2003, when a deadly outbreak of severe acute respiratory syndrome, also known as SARS, hit the city. In 2017, amid an economic downturn, most frontline staff still enjoyed a 1.5 to 2.6% pay raise. ABC News Australia reports, New South Wales Emergency Services Minister David Elliott admits his absence during the bushfires was, quote, inexcusable. Elliott went on a European holiday during the ongoing bushfire crisis. On Friday night, he tagged himself in a social media post as being at the New South Wales Rural Fire Service and admitted his decision to leave the country for a holiday was not the right one. The state is in a state of emergency, bracing for catastrophic conditions on Saturday. The New South Wales bushfire death toll rose to 17 on Friday. In the Japan Times, I alone organized my departure, Carlos Ghosn says of Japan Escape. Interpol issued a wanted notice for the former Nissan chairman who jumped bail in Japan and fled to Lebanon rather than face trial on financial misconduct charges. The Interpol notice is the latest twist in Ghosn's daring escape, which spanned three continents and involved private planes, multiple passports, and international intrigue. It has also embarrassed Japanese authorities. The former Renault and Nissan boss feared the court case was rigged against him. He had been under house arrest in Tokyo since last April. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Catherine Keshimova Long and Paige Cornwell in the Seattle Times report, for first time in nearly three decades, no New Year's fireworks at the Space Needle. The year 2020 emerged without a bang in Seattle, where high winds forced cancellation of the New Year's Eve fireworks show at the Space Needle for the first time in nearly three decades. The fireworks were scheduled to go off at midnight as 2020 began, but organizers in Seattle said gusts up to 44 miles per hour led them to first push back and then to cancel the show. The show was initially delayed to 2 a.m. if winds eased. There was also talk earlier Tuesday of a possible makeup show Wednesday night, but that idea was scrapped. Jim Ryan in the Oregonian reports, "Don't abbreviate 2020 on checks and documents. It could leave you in the lurch." The reason is simple. This year's abbreviation, 20, can be easily amended to appear as if it was dated in a different year. Ira Reingold, the executive director of the National Association of Consumer Advocates, told USA Today that scammers could change a date to create an unpaid debt or to try to cash an old check. Or a scammer could change a date to a later year, from 2020 to 2021, for example, potentially making an uncashed check active again next year. Carla Wilson in the Times Colonist reports, CRD plans to ship tons of sewage biosolids to the mainland. Is this how Victoria says Happy New Year to Metro Vancouver? The Capital Regional District is planning to ship 7,000 tons of dried biosolids out of Heartland Landfill annually via bulk trailers to the Lower Mainland, where it will be used as fuel by a cement plant near Richmond. It's seeking proposals from trucking companies to carry those solids from Heartland to Richmond. Shipping is expected to start mid-year. The CRD estimates 20 tons of treated dried biosolids will be generated every day at Heartland. This week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Grouse Mountain back in BC hands as debt-laden Chinese conglomerate retreats. Much ado about nothing. Y2K was 20 years ago. And 20 thoughts on the tens, the selfie decade. Read the stories behind these headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the big deal on the Breaker.news podcast, the first podcast of 2020. And we welcome back Mario Canseco-Polster with Research Co. to talk about municipal, provincial, federal, and international politics in 2020. First, we'll get started in Vancouver and Surrey. What do you think of the situations in Surrey and Vancouver?
Clearly, there's a change in the way people are feeling about the government in Surrey. And I think that's also something that you see because of the fact that the team that got elected around Bob Doug McCallum is definitely smaller than it was after the election. But unless he loses another person who decides not to toe the line and to join the so-called opposition that we see right now, I think there'll be smooth sailing. You know, there's not going to be a lot of difficulties. There might be a situation where there's going to be a lot of pressure for somebody to get involved. But I think the best way to defeat Doug McCallum, if you're the opposition, is to do something similar to what we saw in Burnaby. If you have too many candidates trying to buy for that seat in 2022, it's going to be very difficult for somebody to be able to have the gravitas and the support from residents to be able to defeat Doug McCallum. So I think what they're hoping for is to have two or three different slates, candidates who want to do something and maybe win with 30-something a percent of the vote. But unless this really becomes an election that is Doug McCallum versus somebody else who is not Doug McCallum, it's going to be very difficult to unseat them.
The luxury time is what Kennedy Stewart thinks he has with two calendar years left and then some. He's already out there fundraising for re-election and he hasn't really achieved much.
Well, I think it's a difficult situation because he really has only a couple of choices. He can try to do this new Westminster style, in the sense of trying to find somebody who is already in council who he can build a team of supporters behind and say, you know, we should be going back into the next council, send these people back who feel about things the same way that I do, and that might make things easier, or to start a new political party. And I think that's going to be the bigger decision in the next year and a half. Do you create a slate? Do you create a specific Kennedy Stewart party, call it whatever you want, and have four or five people running in that slate, and maybe somebody who's in council already who wants to be part of this, because we really haven't seen a lot of traction from the regular municipal parties. We saw the difficulties that the MPA had when their new board was elected. We haven't seen much out of Vision Vancouver, not much about COPE. So it might become a situation where you have an election that is essentially the MPA versus whatever Kennedy Stewart decides to do as far as an actual political party, and maybe a few Greens. But we also need to remember that the Greens are having an election for leader at the BC-wide level, so there might be some interest from some Green councillors who may decide that they want to throw their hand into the ring.
And that leads me to the provincial scene. Andrew Weaver, of course, he's no longer the Green Party leader. Adam Olson is filling the spot temporarily until a replacement is decided by the party in the summer. Andrew Weaver's influence on British Columbia politics was historic. In 2017, he was the kingmaker, helping John Horgan become the premier. Where do you think the chips will fall in 2020?
Well, I think it's incredibly risky to try to force the hand, even though we see a situation right now from the polling that I've conducted where there's not a lot of traction related to Andrew Wilkinson. His numbers aren't really climbing the charts. The Greens do fairly well in some places, but not outside of the island. And the NDP seems to be very popular. Even people who voted for the Liberals look at John Horgan as somebody who's running the show slightly well. And there's no animosity that is as all-encompassing as what we saw in the latter stages of the NDP in the 90s to suggest that there would be a change of government. But it's definitely risky for somebody to try to engineer its own demise. You know, we saw what happened in Manitoba, and it worked very well for the PC government there that got elected with a larger majority. But before that, we have to go back to the election of Alberta back in 2015, when Jim Prentice essentially said, I want a larger mandate. We brought in all of these people from the Wild Rose Party, and I think I can win this election. And just a few weeks later, Rachel Notley from the NDP became premier. So it's always a double-edged sword when it comes to trying to force an election that is happening sooner rather than later. But it also has a lot to do with who the Greens select as leader. If we find out that the new Green leader isn't particularly happy with certain things that the NDP has done, they might be the ones to say that they're not going to be supporting this deal because it was a deal that was signed by their predecessor. So that's also something to watch out for.
Yeah, here in the Lower Mainland, British Columbians did not get ride sharing, did not get Uber and Lyft as promised before Christmas 2019. We still don't have it yet at the start of 2020. Meanwhile, outside of the Lower Mainland, bigger issues, the downturn of the forest industry, it's an issue for the rest of BC.
Part of it is the animosity related to the ride-hailing decision is coming from a lot of people who voted for the BC Liberals in the first place. We've seen BC Liberal operatives tweeting and discussing certain things related to ride-hailing consistently for the past two or 3 years. It's understandable that there's an animosity to the NDP government because they haven't fulfilled this, but it's not something that is going to affect the NDP at a very high level when the election happens. I think there's a different case to be made for the forestry industry, more than anything, because that's a place where the NDP needs to reconnect with voters. You know, we are talking about essentially a party that is exceedingly popular in the Lower Mainland and in Vancouver Island, but doesn't really have a lot more to show for it when it comes to other parts of the province. So trying to talk about the forestry industry in a way that is going to be leading them to get more votes in the next election is definitely something that is crucial. If it ends up becoming two or three seats that are right now in the hands of the BC Liberals, where residents essentially say the NDP helped us, they did things well, and now we have a situation with an industry that is working it's definitely better than it was just a few years ago. That's enough to form the next government and to have that majority without requiring the support of the Greens.
And on the federal scene, Justin Trudeau led the Liberals to a minority government in the October 2018 election. Even though they lost about 1 million votes, the Conservatives gained about 1 million votes under Andrew Scheer, but weren't able to win the election. And after the election, of course, Andrew Scheer is on his way out as leader, and the Conservatives are in a lot of turmoil because 2020 is the year they got to decide a new leader.
It's definitely something that is helpful for the Liberals. The fact that, this is something that might actually be pushed into the early stages of the summer. I don't think it's in the best interest of the Conservatives to do something like this that is going to be coinciding with what is essentially going to be the most watched contest in the history of electoral politics, which is the U.S. election of 2020. So they may actually decide to do this maybe earlier in the year, but it still gives them 6 months to try to figure out where to go, try to boost some of the profiles of the new ministers that they have named, and essentially try to show to a Canadians, look, we hear you, we know that you're upset. If you were really happy with the way things are going, we would have another majority government, but we're going to have to work harder into this. And it's almost reminiscent of what happened with Pierre Trudeau, when he got his minority government in 1972 and then ended up getting a majority just a couple of years later. But circumstances are different. Bob Stanfield was definitely somebody who was going to stay there for the long run. It ultimately depends on what type of connection the new conservative leader can make with residents and essentially try to find a way to target the Liberals in a way that lets them head to the election in a situation that is more favorable.
It's 2020. Trump is up for re-election, but here we are early in 2020, and so far it's brought to you by the letter I. You've got the impeachment hanging over Donald Trump. It's not yet gone to the Senate. The Senate, which is majority Republican, is expected to find him not guilty, but it's going to get its way to the Senate, and it'll give the Democrats a chance to grandstand and soapbox for a while. The other eye, the year started with a bang. An Iranian general killed in Iraq. That has got the globe on its toes right now, worried about what comes next. What do you think of Donald Trump's fortunes as we start the new year?
Well, I think it's important for anybody who looks at American politics to look at the effect that a wartime president can have on something. You know, we were discussing, we can go back to the first Nixon re-election and how a lot of people weren't particularly satisfied with the way things were going, and he ended up getting a huge majority. Similar situation when it comes to George W. Bush, who ended up defeating John Kerry and getting more electoral votes and more votes as far as the actual popular vote than he got in 2000 versus Al Gore. So wartime presidents tend to do very well. I think it'll be a very different type of wartime president. I don't think we'll see an all-out invasion or something that is similar to the shock and awe that we saw in the earlier years of this century as far as the type of things that you can do. But I think this enables Donald Trump to talk to the base and to say, if you don't like my style, if there are certain things about the people that follow us that you're not happy with, that's fine. But we live in a very dangerous world, and I'm somebody who is taking action to try to deal with some of the things at hand. And I don't think any of my rivals is going to be able to do something like that. George W. Bush ran his campaign like that, and everybody thought he was going to lose against somebody who was actually a war hero from Vietnam, widely decorated and with plenty of experience in the foreign policy side. And that was the way it was. So I think it's a way in which he can try to reconnect with some of those voters who aren't really right now looking at him as somebody who can lead. But it's definitely more complicated to head into an election when you don't have anything that you're fighting for on a foreign policy front than to do it the way that he would have done it without all of these things happening over the past couple of weeks.
And then finally, on the other side, the Democrats. Who could it be? Is this a matter of the race being brought to you by the letter B? Biden, Buttigieg, Bernie? Who do you think is the front runner now, and who do you think will be chosen at the convention this summer?
Well, we have another B to add there, and that is Bloomberg. Coming out of nowhere, he hasn't really campaigned that much, and he's been talking about the fact that he can do things differently. I don't think this is going to work particularly well. If it's a contest between two billionaires Americans might actually gravitate towards the one that they already know. And it's really late to try to, even if you have all the fundraising in the world, the level of organization that you need to mount a challenge in a place like Iowa, where it's a caucus, where you need to talk to people, where you need to knock on doors, it might not be enough. Iowa has been quite surprising. You know, I don't think a lot of people expected Barack Obama to do as well as he did back in 2008 and Hillary Clinton to do as well as she did back in 2016. It's a bit of a toss-up in that sense. I think it's a little bit easier now that the number of candidates has been reduced dramatically, but there might still be a bit of a surprise. I think whoever ends up getting this nomination, the vice presidency is definitely going to be quite important as far as the type of states that you can add to your column if you have somebody who can carry a state that went the other way in the last election.
Well, thanks very much to Mario Canseco from Research Co. Happy New Year, and thanks for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Andrew Weaver, the now ex-leader of the BC Green Party. You may not agree with everything in the Green Party's platform, but you must admire the university professor for getting involved in politics and deciding when to call it a day. Weaver will serve out his term as the Oak Bay Gordon Head MLA. Adam Molson is the interim leader, and a new leader will be chosen in the summer. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send us an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of January 5th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on January 5th in 1974, it hit a balmy 15 degrees Celsius at the Vanda station in Antarctica? That heat record stood until 17.5 Celsius was measured on March 24th, 2015 at the Argentina base. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week, Happy New Year!